Welcome to the podcast series The New Student Pharmacist, where we discuss chemistry and pharmacy, as well as leaders in pharmacy careers, community, and chemistry and pharmacy research. We encourage you to support the work we are doing and follow us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts by subscribing for free. Note, the views on the podcast represent those of my guest and I.
Purpose of these episodes not at all for advice or medical suggestions. These are aimed to provide support to peer pharmacists in training in educational and intellectually stimulating ways. Again, these are not at all for medical advice or medical suggestions. Please see your local board and state certified health professional. The views of this podcast represent those of my guests and I.
You are very important, especially to us here at the New Chemist podcasting group. You listening in is significant.
Vous êtes très important, surtout pour nous ici au New Chemist podcasting group. Votre écoute est significative.
Usted es muy importante, especialmente para nosotros aquí en The New Chemist Podcasting Group. Usted escuchando, es significativo.
Você é muito importante. Especialmente para nós do The New Chemist Podcasting Group. Você ouvindo, é significativo.
Είστε πολύ σημαντικοί, ειδικά για εμάς εδώ στο The New Chemist Podcasting Group. Το να ακούς είναι σημαντικό.
Sie sind sehr wichtig, besonders für uns hier bei The New Chemist Podcasting Group. Es ist wichtig, dass du zuhörst.
Je
Je bent erg belangrijk, vooral voor ons hier bij The New Chemist Podcasting Group. Dat je meeluistert, is veelbetekenend.
You are very important, especially to us here at the New Chemist Podcasting Group. You listening in is significant. Okay, welcome to the New Student Pharmacist Podcast Experience. It's so good to have you listening in today. I guess today is Sebastian Kaff, Dr. Kaff. Wow. The last time I spoke with Sebastian, this was probably what, 2021? Was it 2021?
Have you
asked an interview? But I've known Sebastian since give or take 2016, 2015. That's about 9 years or so. 9 years, give or take. But yeah, man, Sebastian, how have you been? How have you been? How is Dr. Kaff? I just love the sound of it. I'm sure you do as well. how is Dr. Kaff today?
Yeah, I'm doing great. Thank you so much. It's so great to be here. I remember talking to you last being on this podcast back in medical school. I was up in North Georgia mountains in a family medicine clinic where I was staying upstairs, and I was recording that from there. And we were discussing, and now here we are. It feels crazy that it's almost been a year since leaving medical school, or rather starting residency, and time flies so quickly. And I feel very grateful to be here in LA and be able to take advantage of some of the nature and everything so far, skiing and maybe a little bit of surfing here and there. It's been great.
Good. So just before we dive in, let me let everyone hear your biography. So Sebastian Kaff is a first year anesthesiology resident physician at UCLA. Yeah, you heard me right. UCLA. That's where he went. So he went to Georgia Tech for undergrad, went to Medical College of Georgia for his doctorate in medicine. In medical school, he conducted research in anesthesiology and presented his research in several state and national conferences, as well as through publications in international reach journals. By the end of medical school, he was selected for induction into the Alpha Omega Alpha National Medical Honor Society. He's now completing his first year as a physician out in Los Angeles, California. In his free time, he is an avid runner, skier, DJ, we'll talk about that, and has started to get into surfing during the summer months. He hopes to pursue a career in academic anesthesiology and serve as faculty to teach future generations of medical students and residents. This is commendable. I'm thrilled from seeing your success so far. So, could you share the enduring passions that led you to pursue a career in anesthesiology? Why anesthesia?
Yeah, of course. I'd love to talk about that. You know, I think many people enter medicine, with a desire to help others, and that can manifest in myriad ways. I think some people enjoy, long-term, patient relationships and being sort of the primary source of medical guidance for patients. And some people enjoy research and even affecting people at the population level, public health and academic research that advance the field of their choosing. And other people enjoy the acute setting of treatment or procedures to rapidly improve the health status of certain patients needing care. I ended up falling into the latter category and initially thought I was actually going to pursue a role in emergency medicine or even the trauma surgery space. But early on in medical school, I ended up shadowing an anesthesiologist, and immediately I felt the specialty really brought together my interest in both procedural care, that sort of rapid acting, solving a problem then and there, as well as pharmacology and physiology, which are lost in some other, I guess, procedural specialties. I really love that anesthesiology, we can assert a broad range of physiologic knowledge and procedural skills to help someone get through a very stressful, very taxing surgery or procedure with essentially little to no pain, which is a really cool and rewarding idea. There's certainly cons, in that if you do your job well, your patient doesn't even remember your name oftentimes, and you truly don't have those long-term relationships that you see in other specialties that see patients regularly or frequently throughout a treatment course. But everything in medicine, and of course any career, is really a set of pros and cons, and you choose what thinks, you know, what you think fits your personality and workflow the best, you know, in the long term, you know, envisioning how might I enjoy my job 5, 10, 30 years from now? And that's where I landed.
Okay, good. I'm glad you landed there. You're actually the second anesthesiologist I've had on this podcast. So this, oh, no. you, the first one was Dr. Emmy Brown from Harvard Medical School. Anesthesiologist, statistician. So you're the second. Who knows, you may end up in the same space, hopefully. So in the demanding world of medicine, how do you ensure you maintain a holistic perspective on your career and life? How do you keep perspective, dude? I see you're doing a lot. It's good you have these hobbies outside of your work, but how do you keep a holistic perspective on your career and life?
Yeah, so I think, you know, paradoxically in this career of helping other people, I think a holistic perspective of how we approach this career really starts with taking care of yourself first, you know? When you're on an airplane, you know, you're instructed to put on your own air mask in the case of an emergency before helping anyone else. And I think in medicine, we're called to do the same thing. You know, do your best to ensure your life and its foundation, whether it's health, fitness, relationships, hobbies, that they're at least in an operable and ideally a comfortable state, you know, before you try to help someone else. And I think when you do that, you're going to be in good shape. When you do that, your perspective is going to be a little bit brighter, if not a lot brighter, on your daily life. You know, I find that if you feel you're not taken care of, you start to develop resentment, you know, towards a career that can take so much time and effort from you. And that resentment then leads into patient interactions and the sort of daily life work, which is, of course, a highly negative consequence that, you know, none of us want for our patients or our colleagues in that sense. So in short, I think, you know, the way I maintain perspective is I try to put on my own mask first and try to feel like I'm taken care of, and then everything else falls into place, I think, if your original intentions are positive and established.
Yeah, that's good. That's very good, actually. That's something to note. Take care of yourself. So what innovative and adaptive approaches have you applied to excel in the field of anesthesiology? So no longer in medical school, you're now in residency. So you're walking hollowed halls, if you will. So what innovative and adaptive approaches have you applied to excel? What are you doing now? Let me make this more practical. So what are you doing now that has changed from the last time you spoke? What has changed in terms of what you're doing for your preparation as you go to your job on a daily basis? So what has changed in your preparation? Is it more like more applied? Is it more case-centric? Is it more retrospective in terms of looking at what other people have done that has worked? Whether Sebastian or Dr. Kaff, what is Dr. Kaff doing differently now?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, I think as we go along our path, we kind of have to shift, like you're saying, you know, your approach to every day. And I wish I had a novel approach to discuss, but so far I think I've, you know, tried a tried and true method of diligent study and finding strong mentors that, you know, that you look up to as you go throughout your, at least my very brief career. But once you're beyond medical school, I've found that medicine is a surprisingly self-driven field. Sure, we have, you know, when you go through a residency program, you have procedural checklists, you know, you've done XYZ number of central lines, for example, and board exams that keep us generally up to speed in a standardized fashion, which of course everybody wants. But to a large extent, I think that the best residents and as a result, the best attendings, they're the ones who seek out work, who offer up their extra time, you know, to help with the procedure, and who especially look up, you know, recent literature or best practices to help them solve a problem with the patient. And I think those people are the ones that learn the most, at least from what I've seen, and are able to apply that knowledge in their day to day. You know, I'm certainly no, you know, gold standard benchmark to aspire to in that sense, but so I do try to understand the decisions I'm making, you know, when treating patients and learning from mistakes. And I think at the end of the day, you know, medical school is such a regimented, you know, do this, take an exam, do this, take an exam, try to impress people, be a good human, you know, apply for residency, all that stuff. But I think it's a lot more self-driven. You know, you're in this program and 4 years later, you're going to graduate most likely, statistically. But in that interim, you know, what opportunities do you seek out to improve yourself? I think that's what I've had to focus on a little bit more is staying that extra hour and doing that extra thing to gain that experience and understand things a little better.
Yeah, I agree with you. I can think of some of my
I completely agree with you. In two ways, I would say. In terms of pharmacy school now at this time, all my professors said the exact same thing that you just said. Going for the extra work, you know, just a little bit extra, pushing a little bit more. I even think of some of my ongoing collaboration projects, you know. It's outside of my coursework, it's not really a grade. There's no grade associated with it, but it will benefit my career. And it's just an extra push that's required for the collaboration. So yeah, I agree with you completely. So, how have you cultivated a sense of vision and fostered teamwork in your medical environment? It's no longer just you trying to make an A now, it's now you working with a team of medical professionals. I've heard lots of advice from different physicians or different people in healthcare. They say, make sure you befriend these particular groups of people in the hospital, like the nurses or the techs or the staff in the pharmacy. Sure. Make sure you befriend them, so especially when you're training, because they are very helpful. However, what do you do to cultivate a sense of vision and foster teamwork in your environment? I take it in some instances you are a leader in some of the spaces that you're in. So how are you fostering vision and fostering teamwork?
Definitely, you bring up a great point with being friends with the right staff members, which is everybody, you know. And I think, you know, I've had many night shifts where I have tried to go out of my way to talk to the nurses of the patients that I'm taking care of that night and sort of proactively address and say, hey, is there anything going on that's bothering you right now? Because, you know, at 2 or 3 a.m., that's a different question. And sometimes things go in a different direction. If we can go ahead and address it proactively, I'm here for you now. I will be then too. But what often happens is by offering up yourself a little bit extra in that way and trying to be friends with them and understand them and their names and why they're here and everything like that, they'll treat you even better and you know, take that extra step to help you, you know, make sure that patient is tucked away for the night before, you know, asking you a question at 3 a.m. that maybe is a little bit more of a stressful or harder question to answer at that time, or maybe things have changed or evolved in a bad way by then. So I think developing those relationships is really important professionally to sort of maintain our teamwork. And then I also really like the idea of fostering teamwork and helping to boost morale, you know, during the long days in the hospital. You know, where everybody's there because they envision we're able to heal and help someone, right? And we get bogged down by bureaucracy and paperwork and delays in care and not being able to go home. But I try to be a fairly positive person at work, you know, sharing snacks, throwing snacks at people, trying to inject some humor into the, you know, often absurd healthcare system. Mm-hmm. And just being a positive listener amongst colleagues, those are some of the basic things I try to do. And I really appreciate when other people do the same thing, you know, and so I always hope that those small actions do the same for my colleagues. And, you know, everybody has good days and bad days and so on.
Oh, yes.
So, overall, I think that all of it goes such a long way because you realize in medicine, it's all such a team, you know, no one can both understand the disease and give the medication and take the patient down to the radiology and do the x-ray and read the x-ray. You know, it's so many people involved in all of that.
Yeah, it takes a team. Takes a team. You're very right. I really like what you said, you know, seeing people, like everyone, befriending the right people, and that includes everyone. That's one thing that you said. And then the second thing that you said really stood out to me is, you know, seeing value in them to the point where you try to understand them in the role that they're in and also beyond the role that they're in. Like, why are they there? Why are they working with you? Yeah, that is very, very important. So how do you manage that, though? Because, you know, you can't go into people's life story when you're on, at least I don't think so, in practice, going into people's life story as you're working a shift or as you're reading a chart, like their whole day. So how do you manage that? Is it just like key questions that you ask? Or is it just like a moment by moment, free-flowing, developing relationships with people?
Yeah, and I think that's a great point. And it also extends to the patients, like you're saying, you know, understanding, you know, where they're going home to, or, you know, seeing a nurse's water bottle and seeing that there's a logo on it, you know, of a mountain, you know, asking about that. And I think we find those common bonds are so simple and so accessible that it's so worth it to just try to not be a stranger. You know, I think that's such a positive part of it. And even the little things just matter so much. And those are some of the examples, I guess, you know, just asking patients about their hobbies and you know, asking the staff the same.
Okay, so what does Sebastian do to have fun? I see you DJ. What type of music are you DJing to? What's Sebastian outside of the hospital?
Is he yeah. Like
a fun going guy? What is Sebastian? Is it like loves to party? What's the Sebastian outside of the hospital? What funny story can you share with the audience, or what good story do you have within Measure? You don't have to tell us your whole life story on sure. the podcast. What funny story can you share with us, or some impactful story that you've had outside of the hospital that really influenced your work in the hospital? Kind of outside that's influencing what you do on the inside, giving you new perspective, or added some sense of like humor, or made you more self-aware. What could you say? What funny story could you share with us?
So this goes back to when I was in college. You know, the very first time I stepped foot in a club, I was 19 and I was the DJ.
Are you serious?
That was back in Atlanta, back when I was in college. And I think, you know, that those were some baby steps at the time, but I ended up kind of getting a little bit more into it and then out of it as I went in, you know, into medical school. And then I, you know, before going into medical school, I actually formed a techno duo with who's now my roommate, who moved out here with me to California. And we play various techno shows back in Atlanta and now also in Los Angeles. And it's a really fun time. And I think, you know, outside of one particular story, which there are many, many funny stories within all of that, I think the creative pursuit is so important to have when you're bogged down in a career like this one. You know, having some place to escape to where it may not feel productive in the true sense sometimes, especially when you're in school. You know, I could do this thing or I could study more for my test. You know, which one is more valuable to me in the long term? Often I think test is the red herring, and I think that you end up performing so much better when you've dedicated time outside of all of that to something that you care about, not just yeah. everybody else. And I yeah. think, you know, that's really led to an injection of fun into my life, and you know, playing a warehouse or a club or whatever it is, you know, and meeting people from different walks of life. And that's another huge thing, you know, in medicine, where everybody you talk to is the same. They're from the same places, went to the same schools, and are of the same education level. But not everybody is in the same path that you are, and it's so easy to forget that. And I think it just adds so much color to your life when you're a little bit outside of your daily life there.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. No, not everyone is in the same path or has the same passions or interests that you have. And we have to make space for that and to have those people out. So what role has mentorship played in your career? Can you name some of your mentors? I know three off the top of my head. I could recite them if I get up in the middle of the night, and some of their work as well, and some of the things that they're currently doing. What about you? Who are some of your mentors?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, mentors have had a deep impact on my growth, especially I think on an interpersonal level and how to live your life as a physician and making it meaningful, you know, just kind of like we talked about, both at work and outside of work. You know, for example, I worked with a family medicine practitioner back in medical school. It was actually the same physician I was working with when I talked to you last time. His name's Dr. Samuel Church, and he essentially runs his own clinic up in North Georgia with, you know, essentially in his own way is a sort of catchment center for a whole giant area of people in North Georgia and even up into North Carolina that come and see him, because there's just not that many clinics out there. And he showed me not only how to approach, you know, broad primary care medicine from an evidence-based perspective, but he also showed me how he, you know, runs the financial aspects of his practice and how he tends to his family and makes them a priority even throughout these crazy days and going between cities. How he impacts his community through advocacy and charity and just good connections and helping other families, you know, sons and daughters through various difficult times in their lives, because he's involved in their lives to that extent. Those are the things that really stuck with me, you know. And you know, another physician I worked with, a plastic surgeon back in medical school, who he had a very high standard of his students. And initially, you know, he was one of the people that, you know, I asked him for feedback after 1 week, and he said, "Sebastian, I'm disappointed in you." And he told me straight up that, you know, I had already done general surgery. I should know X, Y, and Z in the operating room. And I really appreciated that he gave me that feedback, because at the end of those 3 or 4 weeks, you know, I learned his dance and I learned what he expected. And he was one of the people that ended up writing me a letter of recommendation for residency, because I think he was someone that was so involved and so critical to my growth professionally.
Yeah,
and those are some of the people. And even he taught me a lot about, you know, how to navigate the business of medicine and how to navigate, you know, your own well-being within all of that.
Mm-hmm. Anyone else before I go into my take on that? Anyone else to mind?
Those are that come to mind.
Okay, good. Yeah, dude, same thing with me. For me, it's been my dad. My dad's a physician. Even though I'm not taking the path of going into medicine, I'm going into pharmacy. My dad has been like a very big role model for me, a very big mentor, as well as one of my academic professors, my thesis for grad school, the person who was the chair of my thesis committee, Dr. Widlansky. You know, he was very, 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 had very, very high standards, dude. Like, writing work on my thesis, he would tell me straight up, "David, what you wrote does not make sense, or what you wrote needs to change, or what you wrote," like, he was very particular, even down to the spaces between the charges, the spaces between the commas, beyond just the content. Of course, the content had to be accurate, but how the content was presented, because I grew to understand that not only reflected me, it also reflected him. And of course, he supported my thesis to the point where it was published by the university. You know, so it's definitely, I completely agree with you. You know, those people who hold you to a high standard, sometimes it's not comfortable. It's not comfortable, but it allows you to grow, because sometimes growth and comfort are not always linked. Yeah, within a healthy context. So yeah, man, Sebastian, what advice does Dr. Kaff have for people who are in medical school, who are entering residency, who are trying to match? What advice does Dr. Kaff have? What nuggets can you share with the audience as we wrap up?
Certainly. Yeah, I mean, of course, beyond the you know, do as well as you can in school and all of that good stuff, which is actually very important. I think the biggest thing is getting a lot of exposure, you know, getting as much exposure as possible. Be interested. Make yourself available to anesthesiologists, identify ones that you might be able to learn from or make a mentor for you. And I think after that, the specialty will you know, welcome you with open arms. I think that thinking about the longer term aspects of medicine, such as how you might deal with, you know, certain patient loads or certain ways of serving patients. Again, what we talked about at the beginning, long-term, short-term surgical versus medical approaches should be at the core of your specialty decision. And then how you approach applying into that specialty. You know, if I'm going into a surgical subspecialty, you know, not anesthesiology, but, you know, any you know, cardiothoracic surgery or orthopedic surgery, you know, how much room is there to go into academics versus private practice? What kind of city can I live in? How tied am I to one specific practice? You know, do I need to be business minded, or am I okay being an employee somewhere? You know, these are things that are intimately tied to the specialty in which you practice and shouldn't be ignored. So in that sense, get exposure, identify then if it's the right field for you, now that you've seen what it's like to do, what the actual day-to-day work is like, you know, being in an OR almost 100% of the time that you're at work, you know, how does that feel for you? And then honestly, it even in medicine, it does come to connections. You know, if you want to match in a certain location or a certain place, how can you get in front of the people that you are interested in communicating with to arrive at that goal? And, you know, is it a conference or is it a regional conference near that institution where faculty and staff may be approachable? And you can talk to them and ask if you can, you might be able to have a chat with them about their program and what they feel is a good part or a bad part about their program. And of course, you're at the mercy of the match system. And a lot of that comes down to, you know, numbers and exposure. But I think that in some ways, it is a very modifiable and very malleable process in the sense that at the end of the day, it's not a black box. You know, it's not, there's people on the other end that are making those decisions, and people are the things that make up institutions. It's not just Harvard. It's not just UCLA. It's not just, you know, UGA. It's people that are sitting there making those decisions. And at the end of the day, if you know, you manage to have a conversation with someone that's positive, that's likely going to go a long way in a world where it's just numbers and stats, you know?
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, man. So Sebastian, it was so good to have you on the podcast today. You know, from Dr. Brown to Dr. Kaff, we have hosted the brightest and the best and the future. Yes, man. This is good, man. Thanks, Sebastian, for joining me. I'm so glad to have you on today.
Of course. Thank you so much for...
Thanks for listening to the podcast series, The New Student Pharmacist, where we discuss chemistry and pharmacy, as well as leaders in pharmacy careers, community, and chemistry and pharmacy research. We encourage you to support the work we are doing and follow us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts by subscribing for free. We are so glad that you were able to tune in today. Note, the views on the podcast represent those of my guest, and I take care and all the best.